There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
It's the Tuesday edition of College Football Live. Matt, Trevor, and Todd along for the ride. Speaking of rides, guys, we hopped on that Power 5 coaching carousel. And we were looking forward to a bunch of revolutions, a long ride, and then just like that, the ride's over. Everybody off. All the jobs are filled in the Power 5 after the hiring of Chris Klieman at Kansas State. Record of 67-6 in 5 years with the Bison, including 3 FCS national championships. He will coach the team through the rest of this year's playoffs before joining the Cats. It's a 6-year deal. Trevor, start with you. Is Klieman a good fit in Manhattan?
Absolutely. He brings a relentless focus on discipline, process, and family. And that's one of the reasons that Coach Snyder succeeded so well there. When you watch this North Dakota State team play, they remind me of the New England Patriots in the way they fly around with great energy, but with great focus. There's no wasted motion. And off the field, they're a family. I think that's what Kansas State needs.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. And you'd have to wonder how big the pool was for Kansas State, considering how difficult it is to recruit players there, get them to even come in for recruiting visits. They have had success in the past, obviously, under Coach Snyder. But I think when you bring in a coach who's 67-6, as you mentioned, the national championships, he knows success. He knows what a program that has success looks like and how to operate it. I think it's a good fit. It makes sense.
I know it's a Power 5 job versus an FCS, but Trevor, what's the better job, North Dakota State or Kansas State?
You know, on the field and within the community, you got an edge toward the Bison, but I think overall, Kansas State, absolutely. You've got access to the pinnacle of college football there. You've got access to far greater resources. And for your coaching staff and yourself, you've got access to far greater compensation, and that matters. One thing that head coaches think about is the well-being of the families of some of their younger assistant coaches, guys that don't make very much money, that are just one lost job away from being in some financial trouble. And they want those people to have security as well. And that security is much more likely to come at a bigger place with more resources like Kansas State.
Chick, that's a good question. Did you come up with that all by yourself?
I did, in fact. I'm impressed. On the email chain today. I threw that one out there. I thought it'd get you, Todd.
All right. I honestly would struggle with it because you can stay and have success. You know that. It's built at North Dakota State, but this is a challenge. And in addition to what Trevor just said with the money and the families, and I totally understand that, but I think there's always that challenge of wanting to take a program that you know it's going to be difficult. You know that you're going up against the Texases and Oklahomas every year, and how are you going to be able to recruit guys to come in there and do it? And you want to go prove to yourself as a coach that I can get this done and know that I can take on some of the big boys and knock them off. So I think it's a great opportunity. It's a challenge, and I think that's how he's looking at it.
Yeah, and I think, though, that when you talk about the challenge of getting Kansas State back up to a nationally prominent level, when you look at the recruiting he did in North Dakota State, he's got a bunch of guys in there from Florida. I mean, there's a lot of guys from the surrounding states of North Dakota, a lot of Illinois, Wisconsin, places like that. All that stuff is generally within the recruiting footprint of Kansas State to a degree. Florida, though, to have that pipeline into Florida, if he can get those athletes to Fargo, North Dakota, he can certainly get them and more to Manhattan, Kansas. So I think he's already got a head start.
It's interesting when you think about it. North Dakota State has more national championships in the last 5 years than Kansas State has conference championships in the history of the program. So we'll see how Chris Klieman does at Kansas State. How about this comparison, North Dakota State and Alabama? You look at it, since 2011, North Dakota State, 6 national titles, Alabama with 4. Who has the most impressive run, Todd?
I mean, it's got to be Alabama, but to the point, I think it's amazing what they've done. You know, and you've got to put it on scale. Obviously, when you're talking about Bama, they're competing with the best of the best. North Dakota State, they're competing with the same level and really the same opportunity for the same types of recruits. So I'm not taking anything away from North Dakota State. They've been awesome to watch. But to be able to do it at the highest level is really the challenge.
No, it's absolutely North Dakota State. Think about Alabama. They've got more margin for error. I mean, they've got so much in terms of depth of recruiting, depth of finances, depth of resources. If they ever took a step back, they would be right back in the thick of it really soon. Whereas North Dakota State doesn't have those kinds of resources. And if they take a step back, it's harder to build it back up. I think the consistency there is even harder to maintain than at Alabama.
All right, you sold me, Trevor. You're right. North Dakota State.
That's good. That's we love that. When we can just come to a consensus here. By the way, North Dakota State, two wins away from their seventh national title in 8 years. Alabama, five national titles in their last 9 years. All right, so Chris Klieman, the last Power 5 head coaching vacancy to be filled as he replaces Bill Snyder at Kansas State. We mentioned it. We thought we'd be on this ride for a while, but it's over. After that job was filled, again, Ryan Day set to take over for Urban Meyer. You have that change in command. The coaching carousel has stopped spinning, which begs the question, Todd, who's the big winner program-wise of this year's coaching carousel season?
I'm going to go with Colorado, with Mel Tucker. I thought that was a great hire. You know, you've got a guy who has three different stops in the NFL, has been a coordinator with the Chicago Bears, has spent time with Nick Saban in Alabama, now with Georgia, knows how to recruit. He's obviously has a very good understanding of defensive football. And Colorado's a tough place to sell from the standpoint that, you know, they haven't been a hugely winning program over the years. Is everyone in that area of Boulder buying into the football program? Is that a priority at that school? And to get a guy like Mel Tucker to come from the background that he came from, I thought was a really good hire by Colorado.
Plus, better skiing in Colorado for him than in Georgia, I think. So there's always perks, right, for him. I think it's Mike Locksley at Maryland. He's got a long history in that area, and there is fantastic high school football played in the DMV area. A quick look at their roster shows that they've got about a dozen guys just from DeMatha High School, which is a national powerhouse, and a whole bunch of others as well. And Locksley's the kind of recruiter that can continue that pipeline. That's the first thing they need. But there's something else that I think that flies under the radar with Locksley there. With the death of Jordan McNair during a workout, the next coach coming in will have to figure out how to balance pushing the players to get everything they can and having credibility so that the parents and the players will know that he's not pushing too hard. And Locksley, having been with Nick Saban, can tell them, I know where that line is. I know how to get up to that line but not cross it. I know how to protect your players because I've seen it done. I've done it with Nick Saban. And I think that's an important credibility thing moving forward at Maryland.
He's also gone through personal tragedy himself, having lost his son recently. And, you know, I sat down and talked to him at Alabama when getting ready for a game. And, you know, he's open about it. And he's the talk that he had and the discussion that he had about how he's had to just use it to move on and push on. And I think some of those lessons that he's learned, he can share with the family there at Maryland now. And I, you know, they can kind of work with one another. And I just, sitting with him and talking to him, you get the sense that he's a special guy and he's on a mission, and I think he's the right guy for that job.
You guys both picked Nick Saban, former Nick Saban assistants. 11 of those in that category are now FBS head coaches. By the way, I'll throw two more out at you. Purdue and Iowa State didn't have to replace their head coaches. Jeff Brohm, Matt Campbell, big winners there in those respective programs as they get new deals. There's another guy that's being mentioned. And Oklahoma's hoping he's not part of a coaching carousel, especially the NFL level. Lincoln Riley. Todd, should Lincoln Riley, the head coach of the Sooners, pursue or consider NFL head coaching opportunities?
Well, I can tell you this. He's going to get a handful of them because he's the hottest name in NFL circles right now. I mean, teams from the NFL are flying in to go see him in the offseason to pick his brain offensively. And then the other thing I think that gets overlooked with Lincoln is how steady he is as a leader. He's not just like the offensive guru guy who's got it all figured out on that side of the ball. He's running the program the right way, and he's a steady hand. He is. And I'm always impressed by him and the way he carries himself and how he relates to the young men and how he has the organization, if you will, moving all together in the right direction. It's going to be interesting to see with the timing. Now, if they lose in the semifinal game on the 29th, right after that is Black Monday from the NFL.
That's right.
Teams are going to come calling, and it's going to be very interesting to see if he's tempted. But I still think he has more work to do at Oklahoma, Trevor.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, though, that he would be absolutely out of his mind to leave Oklahoma and go to the NFL anytime soon. He can use those offers from the NFL to boost his own contract and the contracts of his assistant coaches. So that's all good. But he's got a good thing going at a place, Oklahoma, that has a history of keeping coaches there for over a decade. He could build not just a career there, but a life there. And there's something to be said for that. And when you talk about those NFL teams coming in to learn his offense, he's developing relationships with them. And as that offense trickles into or concepts from it, trickle into the NFL, those offensive coordinators will figure out how to implement it correctly, which things work, which things don't, how you pair Oklahoma concepts with NFL concepts and make it work. And when he goes into the NFL at some point down the road, if he wants to, then somebody else will have already made the mistakes and gotten it up and running.
Lincoln Riley, 2 years as a head coach, 2 Heisman Trophy winners, 2 college football playoff appearances. That's called efficiency. Not a bad resume in college football so far for Coach Lincoln Riley. Up next here on College Football Live, it's award season where the media bestows the highest honors on college football players, including that of All-American. We'll see what they did with the list next. Time now for the BMW Ultimate Performance. It's Kyler Murray. Maybe you've heard of him. Became the 7th Oklahoma Sooner to win the Heisman Trophy. But that's not all. Congratulations, Kyler. The Associated Press has deemed you worthy of being called a first-team All-American. He'll face off in the college football playoff semifinals against the guy he beat out for the Heisman Trophy, Tua Tagovailoa, who's a second-team All-American. 10 of the first-team selections were from teams in the CFP. 4 of them played for the Tide. You got Quinnen Williams there, Clemson with Cleland Farrell, and Christian Wilkins. Trevor Maddux, your biggest takeaway from the All-American list?
My biggest takeaway was who wasn't there. Purdue had more first-team All-Americans than Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State combined. Wow. That's one with Rondale Moore, their terrific receiver slash running back. And it kind of is surprising because in August, Todd, I think most of us thought that the Big Ten East was one of the 2 toughest divisions in all of college football.
Yeah, no question. I mean, in the preseason, we would have said Rashawn Gary and Nick Bosa. That's a no-brainer. They're both in. Obviously, the seasons didn't go as expected for either of those guys. But I'll go to Michigan specifically on that defensive side. I thought that Chase Winovich was a player that really deserved to be on the list. And Devin Bush, the linebacker who was, I believe, second team, to me, he was one of the first team guys. I mean, he was one of the best linebackers in all of college football. And going back to Winovich, he outplayed Rashawn Gary this entire season, if you look at the production-wise and if you just put on the tape. So those are 2 guys that I thought really deserved to be there in the first team and didn't see their names.
Yeah, and you know, I thought that Dexter Lawrence, the defensive tackle for Clemson, deserved to be at least up on the third team. That's where Ed Oliver was of Houston, and Oliver disappeared a lot this year. He had injury that he had to deal with, but as I was watching tape on him sometimes trying to find plays that I could use for a great breakdown on him, it took me a long time to find him doing something, actually. And so, he's a great player, but I think from a standpoint of body of work this year, I think Dexter Lawrence deserved to be in that group of first team through third team.
When you look at the first teamers and you break it down by conference for those Associated Press All-Americans, it's the SEC at the top with 11, more than double that of the next most with the ACC. Alabama players accounting for 6 of the 11 SEC first teamers. So, Todd, the SEC has the most All-Americans. Does that mean the SEC is the most talented conference in all the land?
Absolutely. I mean, we say it every year, whether it's All-Americans, whether it's just watching the tape or the NFL draft, it's every single year, it seems like, at least for the past decade that we've talked about it. The other thing that really stands out, where's the Pac-12? There's no representation from the Pac-12 there. And, I understand the conference did not have a great year this year, but when you look at it, there were some pretty good players in that conference, but nobody from the Pac-12. Is it the West Coast bias, or is it they just had a huge down year? It's interesting.
Yeah, and when you look at the SEC and the All-Americans, the players drafted in the NFL, Todd, you know more than most about how many of these guys end up in the league compared to other conferences. I think part of it is where they are. In other words, they're in Florida, Atlanta, South Louisiana, some of the hottest recruiting beds in the country to go with places in Ohio and Texas and California. But they're just all right there, and that's where the passion is. There's so much passion for football. Other places, you get some great football players playing other sports. But in the South, if you're a great football player, it's football that you're playing, and I think that's one of the reasons that there's so much talent there that chooses to stay home.
Yeah, in Alabama every year, it's ridiculous. 22 draft picks the last 2 years, 8 in the first round, 4 in each of the past 2 years. And I'm looking at it this year, they've got 11 or 12 more guys that are going to get drafted and 3 to 5 potential first rounders. So they alone could beat some of these other conferences.
You mentioned geography, Trevor, and where they're located. We got signing day coming up, early signing period, December 19th for the ESPN 300, more than half of those in the ESPN 300 are located in states within the Southeastern Conference footprint. So sometimes, you're right, states and teams are just a victim of where they're located in the United States. So we got a lot more to get to here on College Football Live, including Will Grier, just the latest to decide not to play in a bowl game. This trend isn't going anywhere, but is there a way to stop it and snub that trend? We'll see what happens there, and we'll get our takes on that. You can watch players actually play college football games on Saturday as bowl season officially begins. On ABC, North Carolina A&T takes on Alcorn State in the Air Force Reserve Celebration Bowl at noon. Then Fresno State squares off against Arizona State in the Mitsubishi Motors Las Vegas Bowl. And remember, Saturday, December 29th on ESPN, we'll have the college football playoff semifinals. We kick things off with Clemson and Notre Dame in the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic at 4 Eastern. Then it's Alabama and Oklahoma in the Capital One Orange Bowl. Let's take a look at our Capital One Bowl Mania preview. A number of players have elected to pass on playing in bowl games to get ready for April's NFL draft. West Virginia quarterback Will Grier added his name to that list over the weekend, joining the likes of Greedy Williams, Rashawn Gary, Ed Oliver, N'Keal Harry, Deebo Samuel as well. For more, log on to ESPN.com/Bowl Mania. Todd McShay, is Will Grier hurting his draft stock by sitting out of the bowl?
I don't think so. It's a disturbing trend. I honestly didn't think we'd start to see quarterbacks part of this whole mix. I really didn't. And, you know, we can talk about whether they should be held to a different standard or not. I know Trevor got into that discussion yesterday. The bottom line is Will Grier got an opportunity to go to West Virginia after mistakes made at Florida. And they brought him in. He's never played in a bowl game. Why wouldn't you want to go and play in this game, finish out your career, and then go and pursue the NFL? He's not going to be a first-round pick. I do think he's going to be probably a second- or third-round pick when it's all said and done. And I understand it. I understand the concern about durability. He got injured last year. And also the opportunity to start preparing for that process, getting ready to get NFL verbiage and getting on the board in front of executives, etc. But at the end of the day, I really didn't see this coming, and I'm surprised that Will Grier is the first quarterback to make this decision.
Todd, I see it differently. I'll give you two words. Washington, Redskins. West Virginia is just an easy drive from Washington, D.C., and in the last few weeks, Will Grier would have seen all the media coverage of two quarterbacks there break their leg. Alex Smith, it was a horrific injury that threatens not just his career, but his quality of life going forward. Then a couple of weeks later, his backup, Colt McCoy, broke his leg as well, though not nearly as severely. That brings back memories then of Mackenzie Milton of University of Central Florida, had a horrific break more similar to Alex Smith. And if you're Will Grier, you go home every day to your wife and your daughter, and you're thinking, where do I have the most obligation? To them, to make sure that I secure at least that first contract in the NFL, or to my teammates in what amounts to an exhibition game. And I think that he did the right thing by stepping out of this game because of the obligations that he had. If I'm Will Grier, what I'm thinking is Alex Smith and Colt McCoy got paid for getting hurt. Mackenzie Milton at UCF did not get paid for getting hurt. And it's not worth the risk, not now.
I understand. I'm not disagreeing at all with what you're saying. I guess it was just me, again, being naive, thinking the quarterbacks are kind of wired differently and are look at it in a different way with the leadership and trying to be there for your team. But I've always said, listen, I don't like the trend. I don't want to see it continue to grow, even though we know it's going to, and it's happening right in front of our eyes. And I was on the field with Jalen Smith, and I watched him have that horrific leg injury. And
Notre Dame, I was
on the field with Jake Butt, and I watched him after sitting down with both young men the day before and talking to them and talking about them about their NFL futures and seeing just the devastation in their eyes as they get carted off the field. So I understand it, and I get it. I just am surprised that he's the first quarterback, major quarterback, that we see make this decision.
Yeah, we can understand it and not like it. Those things are not mutually exclusive, and I think that's the way it is with Will Grier and all these guys that are deciding to sit out. Missing out on the Camping World Bowl means he will miss out on a $400 Best Buy gift card, as well as an Ogio backpack with a luggage tag, too.
He should rethink it now.
And a fossil watch. I know, fossil watch. Will, if you're watching this stuff, I mean, you may want to rethink this. The NCAA does allow a max gift of $550 per player. Wide range of gifts here. See, a cornhole set, a PS4. Todd, pick the bowl game you'd want to play in just for the swag. What is
Alamo Bowl? I buy everything now on Amazon, so I'll take that $425 gift card.
Yeah, I'm with you, Todd. Give me the gift card. It's really nice to get those things. They're very nice. They're logoed with the bowl. But ultimately, do I want that hat or do I want a different hat? If I got a gift card, I can buy my own hat.
Shades are sweet.
Yeah. Get those. There was look at that.
Yeah, see, you get the game consoles and. But if you want a game console, buy it with a gift card. That's my thought.
Look at that.
It used to be, back in the day, we got a hat with a Holiday Bowl sticker on the front and a watch that stopped working on day two.
Speaking
and
of watches,
turned your wrist green.
That's good. Time for three and out. I'm sure you still have that watch. Dan Mullen hosted an ESPN 300 defensive lineman, Lloyd Summerall, on a visit. His dad got to dress up as well, Todd. What a great pitch.
Mullen, man, he's starting to become the new Harbaugh. He's getting out there. He's getting creative. I love it.
Yeah, Harbaugh's thinking, hey, I just climbed a tree.
That's it. Speaking of Harbaugh, Taylor University, they do that Silent Night basketball game every year. Look at the antics. He's got it down.
Fantastic. That's perfect. good for Taylor University for letting him up there to do that, too.
That's perfect. Was great.
That is so good.
And I don't believe they were playing Ohio State that night, which is also a good thing. Ryan Tannehill, quarterback from Miami, said they nicknamed this play Boise, the Kenyon Drake miracle play. Although, who ran it better, Boise or Miami, Trevor?
Oh, Boise, because Boise ended with a marriage proposal at the end of it all. If nobody got proposed to in that Miami game, it's second place.
A lot of respect for Boise. They've been doing it for years, man. It's not just that play. They're the kings of the trick play.
No doubt, as Miami gets it done, Patriots continue to lick their wounds. We'll see you on Wednesday, 5 o'clock Eastern, ESPN2.